Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, everybody. It is Thursday in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My name is Adam Bittner, assistant sports editor for multimedia at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, back with Post-Gazette sports columnist Paul Zeiss for our weekly Zeiss is Right video. We are talking dream Steelers free agents today. Guys, they're probably not going to be able to sign, but you know what? We only got a couple weeks to go until free agency. Might as well at least talk about the topic while we can. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing good. I got nice sunny day out. It always makes it a lot easier, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not just sunny. It's a little bit warm out. So I think we're getting that early spring Punxsutawney Phil promised. So that's good stuff. We're also going to get into some Penguins. Are they toast after the last week? Paul and I talked about that last week, the six-game stretch being really important. They've now lost 3 out of 4 during that stretch. Going to get into Pitt basketball a little bit as they come down the stretch here. Is their March Madness hope still alive after the loss to Wake Forest? Then maybe we'll get into some Pirates and Penn State as well. Before we do, just want to thank our primary sponsor for this episode and every episode of the Zeiss is Right video here on the Post-Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel. Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. There's no better place to get new windows and doors installed in your home than Pella, who can help you save on energy costs year-round. Schedule a free in-home consultation with your local Pella Windows and Doors to find the right product for your home and budget. Give them a call at 866-593-1560 to discuss your project further. That's 866-593-1560 to get started planning on your new windows and doors installation with Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. All right, Paul, let's get into it. Jerry Dulac raised my eyebrow in his chat today. Someone asked him if the Steelers were going to put all of their free agent money into one guy this offseason, what would that look like for him? Jerry quickly poo-pooed the idea, said they're not going to do that. But if they did, I would put all my chips in the middle of the table on Chris Jones from the Kansas City Chiefs, multiple times Super Bowl champion, an integral part of what they're doing out there in Kansas City. I guess I'll start there, Paul. What's your reaction to hearing Jerry say that in his weekly chat on postgazette.com? And is there one name that you have in mind that you would say, yeah, that's worth pushing all the chips in the middle of the table for?
Well, I would tell you, obviously, Chris Jones would be a really good addition to the Steelers. Could you imagine if they added him and you've got Watt and Highsmith? And, I mean, I guess technically you probably still would have Cam Hayward, too. That would be a front seven for the ages in many, many ways. So I could live with that. I think that's pretty good. I didn't see the list. Who are, like, the top receivers on the list? Because obviously you know that you and I have been talking about this for at least a year. Whoever the top, I mean, Tyler Boyd obviously would be, but there might even be better guys than him on the board. But
yeah, it's actually kind of sparse, Paul, honestly, in terms of like the top 50 free agents. I looked at the list from CBS.com and then I compared it to SpotRack and their projections of what the market value for some of these guys is. The big names I found, Mike Evans, $23.8 million. He would be leaving the Bucs, but there's a suggestion the franchise tag could be used there. Calvin Ridley of the Jaguars at $17 million. Hollywood Brown leaving the Cardinals for his market value is projected to be about $14.8 million. Michael Pittman, I believe, was on that list as well, but I didn't even write him down because it seems widely expected that they will use the franchise tag to keep him in Indianapolis. Do any of those names tickle your fancy, Paul, if they end up being on the open market and are not franchise tagged?
Well, I'll say this. If they could get Mike Evans, that would obviously change their team a little bit. Now, he's the most expensive one, which is a problem. But on that list, he seems like he's the best one, too. He would give them a lot of different things they need in the passing game. And again, if you're not going to spend your money on a quarterback, spend your money on somebody that's going to catch the ball. But if you bring in a guy like Mike Evans, I would tell you this much. He would be a guy that you could put on the outside. You could move Deontay Johnson to the inside and you have Pickens on the other side. That would significantly change my thoughts about the wide receiver position of the Steelers, as well as the number of weapons that whoever the quarterback is would have to, at his disposal.
Do any of those other names intrigue you? I think Calvin Ridley's interesting to me just because he's coming off of that big gambling suspension. We haven't really seen him be particularly relevant for a while. Maybe you could get a bit of a break on him. But then I think further down the list, Paul, Marquise Brown doesn't do anything for me.
He does nothing for me.
Michael Pittman, I think he could be a nice receiver. I don't know if he gives you a whole lot that's different than Deontay, though. I mean, my perception of him is solid route runner. Can make some plays, but he's not going to be a game-breaking type of guy that I think you want to allocate a whole bunch of salary cap to with so many other needs on this team.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, that's the most important thing is if you're going to allocate a lot of money to a guy, you better make sure he's going to be a playmaker or going to be different or an upgrade over the things that you already have. And that's why I went with Mike Evans. I mean, why not go to me? Why not go with the best one, I think, at least on that list? I know he's getting older. I know that he's getting a little bit long in the tooth. But I also know he's pretty productive, and had some really big games for them last year. He can still be that guy. And, Ridley, to me, I don't know. They never seem to do well with these reclamation projects, right? And he's not a straight reclamation project. But anytime you miss a season or you miss a large chunk of a season for a non-football reason, those guys don't tend to do very well when they get back. Some do, some don't. I don't know. I just would stay clear of that. I just really would. I would go for Mike Evans.
So it's pretty much Mike Evans or nothing for you in terms of these free agents. Now, we should say there's guys further down the list that they might be interested in, they might sign. We're not talking about that today. We're talking about guys at the top of the market that you'd be talking about risking a lot of money on.
Yeah, that's what you said. I mean, that's why I went with – on that list, I would go with Mike Evans. But there's a couple of those other guys that I wouldn't mind having. But I thought the question was who would you most want, and so that's why I said Mike Evans is the guy on that list I would want more than any of them.
I agree. Let's move on to the cornerback market. Some interesting names there. Legarius Sneed I think is at the top of the list from the Chiefs, but that gets complicated with what happens with Chris Jones. If they do tag Chris Jones, then you figure Legarius Sneed will be available. If they find a way to extend Jones without having to franchise tag him, which has been the suggestion, then it's pretty likely that Kansas City would probably use the franchise tag on Sneed, and therefore he wouldn't be available. But just for the sake of this conversation, let's say Legarius Sneed's available at $16.3 million, according to SpotRack, projecting his market value. Jalen Johnson from the Bears, I believe the Steelers were connected to him around the trade deadline, so I find that one interesting. SpotRack expects him to make $15.7 million. Brian Burns from the Panthers, $21.7 million. Kendall Fuller from the Commanders at $14.1 million. And then Jeff Okuda from the Falcons at $14.7 million. Any of those names and prices intrigue you, Paul?
Well, I think any of the guys that are right around $15 million, right? There was like two or three of them that were right around $15 million. If you could get one of those guys at that price, I think so, but I don't know that you can go much higher than that because, again, Adam, think about how much money you're already spending on your defense. When you spend money on your offense, when you spend money on a receiver, I mean, that's your offense, and if you think about it, they've got young players with rookie contracts or whatever all across the board on offense. But on defense, man, if you had a $20 to $25 million player on that defense, I just don't know how you're going to make it sustainable at all, because regardless of what happens this year, you're probably going to have to start paying a quarterback over the next couple of years. To me, I look at it and say, there was, I think, three guys that you mentioned that were right around $15 million, right? Is that?
Yeah, we had Jalen Johnson at 15.7, Kendall Fuller at 14.1, Jeff Okuda 14.7, and then Snead was on the higher end at 16.3.
Right. One of those four. Any of those four, really. One of those four, to me, that's about the range that you want to be in. And if you're paying them that, that means they've been productive on a level that they're going to get paid. I would say any of those four I would take, because I think that's the most important position, really, on the defense, in terms of if you're looking to fill a hole and you can't get Chris Jones, corner is a place where you're going to spend money.
So you'd be comfortable with those guys. If they were the only big offseason name, Paul, you'd be comfortable with any of those four names. And you know, maybe you spend a couple million here, a couple million there, but that's the only big name you're getting this offseason is one of those corners?
No, because like I said, if I had my druthers, I would sign a receiver before that.
But sure, that, sure, yeah. But let's just pretend you don't get Mike Evans. Yeah.
Okay, if you don't get Mike Evans, yes. If they come in with one of those four guys and that's their big offseason moves, I would be okay with it, because I think that's absolutely a position of need. I think it's a position where you're okay spending a little bit of money. I think that, you know, and I don't have right in front of me how old all those guys are, but I would take whichever guy is on the youngest side there, that you might be able to get three or four really good years out of. And that's the direction I would go, because theoretically receiver is my first priority. I know it's not a lot of other people's first priority. And if you could get a Chris Jones, obviously that's different, but realistically looking at that number for that position, considering you have a rookie on the other side who's making a second round pick, who's making peanuts, absolutely, I do that. I go after that. No question about it.
Let me throw some front seven guys at you, Paul. These are mostly outside linebackers or defensive ends. Some interior guys, but not a whole bunch. Leonard Williams from the Seahawks at 16.7. Christian Wilkins from the Dolphins at 20.2 million, according to SpotRack. Josh Allen from the Jaguars. I think he's going to be one of the biggest names on this free agent market. SpotRack has him at 23.9, so just under 24. Jonathan Greenard from the Texans at 13.4. Patrick Queen from the Ravens at 18.5. I know a lot of Steelers fans have talked about him, just like they've talked a lot about Snead. So he's a name. Chase Young from the 49ers at 13 million, and then Za'Darius Smith from the Browns at 12.4. If any of those guys are available, Paul, where do you put them on the list of desirability and going out and getting them as the only major acquisition of the offseason, possibly from your free agency?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, here's the thing I'll tell you. A guy like Chase Young at $13 million is probably realistic, right? Somewhere in that neighborhood. And I'm not necessarily saying him. There were two or three guys there that were in that $13 to $14 million range. Obviously, Chase Young, we know he's got the ties to Tomlin because of that NFL films or whatever. But to me, that's really the neighborhood I'd be going in and looking for if I'm going to upgrade that position. And I can't swing for the fences and get one of the best on the list. I mean, to me, I think $13 million is about where I would really try and end up. Because you know you're getting a good player who maybe isn't an elite player, but maybe has the opportunity to try and be an elite player or the ability to. So I'll just say Chase Young, but it's more about the salary figure and those two or three guys that are comparable salary-wise to him.
The one name I'll circle back on, Paul, ask you what you think about this, is Leonard Williams from the Seahawks at 16.7. That's substantially more than you're saying as 13 being, you know, where you would be ideally. But he's pretty good in the middle of the defense. Is that someone that you maybe think a little bit more about as a potential, you know, run stopper in addition to providing you help with the pass rush?
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess the thing about it is, I guess, let's see, it would have been a year and a half ago. They really struggled against the run, didn't they, Adam? I mean, they had a hard time. They really were not very good against the run. And at times this year it creeped in. So clearly if you have a guy that's got that skill set and it's only going to cost you $3 million more, yeah, I could live with that. I actually think that would be a smart acquisition. But if you do that, you're probably not going to be able to do anything else or do much of anything else, because that's a pretty sizable cap hit. And that's a pretty sizable contract. But what we've seen from this defense is they got better as the year went on. I think they got better against the run, much better against the run. So it's still predicated on them getting to the quarterback, and any of those $13 million guys, they're going to get to the quarterback. But so that would be at the top end of the guys that I would probably look at, 16.5 or 7 million or whatever it is, just because I think that if you sign someone to that big of a deal, it's going to be really difficult to fit anybody else in under your umbrella, given where they're at with the cap.
How do you value any of those guys compared to the corners? I think you and I agree. Mike Evans, probably not the number one guy here we're talking about if you could go get him. But if he's probably not available, would you rather have one of those guys than a corner, or would you rather have the corners?
I want a corner. I mean, you know, to me, I want a corner and I want a receiver. Those are the two. If I'm the guy, I'm obviously center, and you know, if you can find a tackle that's capable of starting right away, maybe. But to me, corner and receiver are the two positions that I think have the most glaring need that you can probably fix the easiest by just going out and getting a plug-and-play guy that's going to help you do it.
The last guy I wanted to ask you about, Paul, was Andre James, the center from the Raiders. CBS ranked him as the number 25 free agent available, above a Patrick Queen, above a Chase Young, above several of these guys that we've talked about. SpotRack, unfortunately, does not have a projection on how much he'd make, but let's just say, hypothetically, you can pay a center $10 million to come in here rather than having to invest draft capital in a Max Powers Johnson or a Zach Frazier. Does that interest you at all as potentially the big free agent acquisition for the offseason?
Well, the thing about it is, if you've spent so little money on offense that you could probably get away with and afford paying a little bit more money for a center than probably you're comfortable, right? I think that's always the key. I look at it like that. I mean, Adam, all of these discussions people have, you know, and of course, you know, on Sports Talk Radio, which obviously you know that I do, and everything else, and you've got to create content and discussions. I always try and step back and say, how much is it going to cost? And I look at it in terms of building a team based on salaries and all that other stuff. So to me, your offense, you have an offensive, you have a tackle that's on a rookie deal. You have your other tackle on a rookie deal. So, you know, if you want to put a little bit more money into your center and go out and get somebody that's ready to plug and play. And I would prefer that actually over a draft choice for sure.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty compelling narrative, Paul, especially when you consider the guy in question is only 26, Andre James. So at 285, I think he's got some athleticism to him. So he's someone that could be a fixture for you, maybe not for another 10 years, but maybe you could get 5 to 7 out of him and have that position kind of locked down for the future. I think that's a name certainly to watch, you know, even if the Steelers do go out and get, you know, some other guys at substantial numbers. I'd be looking at Andre James. Paul, let's get into the Penguins here in a little bit. I want to ask one more question on the Steelers. Deontay Johnson, Jerry was asked about him in his chat. He said, most of your Post-Gazette colleagues don't expect him to sign another deal with the Steelers. And if that's the case, if he doesn't re-sign with the Steelers, sign another extension, should they consider trading him this offseason, which is, you know, pretty much right now? What are your thoughts on that, Paul, given how much you and I talk about receiver and how little the Steelers have beyond him other than really George Pickens? I think George Pickens is the only proven commodity that you'd have left at that position. Do you have any feelings on Deontay Johnson's future and how he could fit into this puzzle we're talking about of getting some of these other pieces in here?
Well, on one hand, I don't know how you can afford to get, you know, to offload a receiver at this point, because I don't think you have enough. I would say I would not give him an extension, but I would probably look into keeping him around for a year. And then maybe, you know, using, even though it's a big number, maybe using the franchise tag on him, although I probably wouldn't do even do that. What I would try and do is get 1 year out of him and then sort of see where we're at the end of the year. If you can work out an extension that kind of works for you, meaning he's going to have to take a discount, maybe I give him a 3-year deal. But right now the Steelers aren't really, if you think about it, they're not in a position to really part ways with a receiver, especially one that's reasonably productive. That's their issue, because if you know, were to move on from him, now you've got even one more receiver. You probably are going to need about three coming into the team in the offseason. Now you'd be talking about another one. I think that's a tall task. So I probably would be very cautious about trading him. If someone blew me away with an offer, maybe. But I would just basically say we're going to play out this season and sort of see where we stand.
If it's a second-round pick, Paul, and you could say we're going to pick a receiver in the second round, I mean, is that what you would consider getting blown away, or would you need more than that?
I mean, that's – I would say, you know, I would want more than that, maybe a second and a third, right? A second might not do it for me. I'd think long and hard about it, but when I'm talking about bitten blown away, I'm talking about, okay, you put something on the table that I basically can't refuse.
Yeah. Listen, they got a second rounder for Chase Claypool, so I guess that's probably not such a ridiculous, you know, question, Paul. Is could they get more than that? Chase Claypool stinks, and they got a second rounder for him. So, I mean, if you could get a second, third, second, and fourth, I think a second and third would be what? That would be two top 100 players. If you could plug in a receiver, sign a receiver, I think you could address that position pretty quickly. A lot of people are talking about Tyler Boyd. I can see that, but I agree with you. You got to be sure what you're getting. Paul, we're going to get into the Penguins here and what's going on with them. Just want to thank one more sponsor, Pitt Johnstown. It's a Pitt quality education with up close and personal learning, a top ranked Northeast public college by U.S. News and World Report. Generous scholarships and financial aid are available, located on 655 picturesque acres with easy access to the city center, including shopping and dining, a vibrant campus life with an active D2 athlete community. Check out Pitt Johnstown today. Paul, I teased it at the top of the show. We said last week this 6-game stretch with, what, 5 games at home was going to be vitally important for the Penguins before the trade deadline here in determining whether they're buyers or sellers. They've won 1 out of 4 so far, losing overtime on Tuesday night to the Islanders. Well, they're way out of a playoff spot. I think it's 8 points. They got a million teams to climb them over. Do you see them as toast at this point, even if they win these next couple games?
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand what we're doing now at this point. I know Cal Dubas was speaking to the media. I didn't get to see all of his quotes. I saw enough of them to understand that he seems like a guy who might even be handcuffed a little bit in what he can do. And he's also handcuffed a little bit because he's got the 3 stars that have become untouchable because of their contracts and the no movement clause. But The Penguins, I think, are top 5 in goaltending this year. Malkin, Letang, and Crosby, all 3 of them have played. I mean, so 20, what are they got 70 or 60, they've played 54 games or whatever, 54 games they've played. You know, they've all been healthy for a overwhelming majority of those games. Stars are healthy. Goaltending is good, right? You're playing more responsible on defense than you ever have, and yet you're still 8 points behind. What does that tell you? You're probably just not good enough. And so, to me, if they wanted to be smart about it, I mean, they would basically strip it down and try and rebuild, get it kick-started again. I bet you Sidney Crosby would be willing to stay there and be a part of it. You know, but to me, this thing where every single year we're, you know, now we're down to applauding effort and, you know, process and all this other stuff that doesn't mean wins. And that's a problem to me. You know, you have to want to move forward. And the only way you do that right now is take a little step back and then hope that you circle the wagons and then you start going on and get back to your next run of, you know, Stanley Cups or whatever.
What should they do first, Paul? Should they fire Mike Sullivan and get a new voice in there, or should they blow the whole thing up and keep Mike Sullivan? Because, you know, one thing I've heard a lot is, well, you can't really blame Mike Sullivan because the players want to play the way they're going to play, and he's more or less just letting especially that core of Malkin, Crosby, and Letang do what they got to do. And that, you know, the suggestion was, those three guys aren't going to want to play for anyone else. They're not going to listen to anyone else. But if they're not listening to, you know, if they need to play differently and they're not listening to their current coach, then what good is Mike Sullivan doing there after, you know, all these years now without a playoff series victory? I mean, it's a similar conversation to what we have with Mike Sullivan. So I guess for you, Paul, if you had to pick what they're going to do this offseason, is the first move of trying to jumpstart this thing, would you rather see them make a bunch of trades, or would you rather see them try to get a different voice in there with the existing core and see what happens?
Well, I mean, I would have moved on from Mike Sullivan already, if that's what you're asking me. What should they do? They should move on from Mike Sullivan. They should talk to Letang and Malkin and see if they can, you know, convince them to let them move their contracts off the books. I probably would even get rid of Brian Rust. I would get rid of Gensel. I would try and trade everybody I could trade to get draft, you know, capital and prospects back, and basically try and rebuild the entire organization top to bottom. Now, that's probably not going to happen. They're not going to do that to Mike Sullivan. And so what's realistic? What's realistic is they get rid of Jake Gensel. They trade him. You know, they maybe make one or two other tweaks with the roster. But I fully expect at the end of the offseason, when we start into training camp, it'll be the Penguins with the same coach, the same assistant coaches, and pretty much the same cast of characters on the ice. That's that right there is my prediction.
Yeah, I just don't. It's not going to work. I mean, I think you got to make some kind of major change. And to me, this was brought up. I was listening to The Fan on the way home. You know, they said either they're not being coached well right now, or they're being coached well and they're not, the players aren't listening, and that still reflects poorly on the coaches. So that's why I kind of look at Mike Sullivan as a guy who has been on scholarship, I think, for way too long. Paul, let's do a couple rapid fire topics here to wrap up. Pitt gets blown out by Wake Forest on Tuesday night. Has this shaken your confidence about their ability to make the tournament, or is even a team that has been as hot as they have lately, are they going to have an off night between here and Selection Sunday?
The problem that Pitt has is in losing that game, they basically gave themselves no more margin for error. That's the problem that they have. So they're going to have to run the table, and even running the table, they might not be there. They're going to need some help from other bubble teams. But if they lose the game, Adam, it's absolutely over. They do have a chance for a quad one win on the road against Clemson. So if they win out, that would be a really big, big piece of their resume. That might be enough to keep them right inside the cut line. But they have no one out really to blame but themselves, because they lost all those games in December, you know, and they were, when they started the ACC, what was it, 1-5 or 1-6? So their margin for error was completely, you know, was short to begin with. And that meant, you know, every time they lose a game, well, it knocks them back down the hill a little bit. And I thought, you know, the Tuesday night game was sort of puzzling, because they got beaten every aspect in every phase of the game. And I thought we were beyond that, where they would get dominated like that, and they did. You know, now I've got questions about them. They play Virginia Tech coming up here. I mean, Virginia Tech ain't great, but you know what? They could beat you. And so it's going to be really difficult, I think, for Pitt because they do have no margin for error. But if they win out, they can do it.
Paul, you wrote a column about the attempts by some Penn State trustees, and I'm going to name them because they should be named every single time we talk about this, because it's not everybody at Penn State. It's some specific people: Jay Paterno, Anthony Lubrano, Ted Brown, the same old cast of characters, Paul. It's been doing this for a decade now. I did my rant on the topic on our Thursday video with Seth Engel, our Wednesday video with Seth Engel. The Penn State video. So if you haven't checked that out, please do. It's about midway through the video. Paul, I'm going to give you the floor about, you know, how counterproductive is this to be focusing on Joe Paterno when you've lost to Ohio State and Michigan 3 years in a row, when it's the Wild West of NIL, all kind of money's getting flown around, and you're still talking about Joe Pop.
Yeah, I mean, that's a terrible look. And this is the way I put it, Adam. I don't get involved. People want to argue with me about what, you know, Joe knew and what he didn't know, when he knew it, and all. I think all of that stuff is irrelevant. Here's what's relevant. His right-hand man for 20 or 21 years or whatever it was, a guy he was very tight with, a guy who was on his staff that he oversaw, was arrested and convicted of 45 counts of some, of sexual abuse of children or whatever. I'm sorry, if you're Joe Paterno, fair or not, that's a part of your legacy. That's a stain on your legacy that's always going to be there. And so given all the things that are going on in college athletics and the sensitivity about a lot of things, I'm not even sure why you're talking about this right now. Like, I don't know what happened that you felt was the need to throw it out there, but it's absurd. It really is absurd. You know, to me, they have to reevaluate, I guess, every so often, how they can keep his legacy alive as a football coach without triggering all the people that have gone through that, or victims, families, and everything else. And the that's why you can't name the stadium after him. You know,
I agree, Paul, and I agree wholeheartedly that his legacy doesn't matter to this conversation to me at all. It's about, what does Penn State need right now? What Penn State needs is a rabid fan base that is willing. Like, look at what Michigan just did. They possibly stole signs. Jim Harbaugh was suspended for half the season, you know, pushing the envelope. And where's Michigan's president out there defending him vociferously? Every member, you know, everyone at Michigan is swimming in the same direction. And it almost feels like this is there's still a contingent of people that want to bring Joe Pa back as the coach. And that's, you know what I mean? As if they can bring him back from the dead and he'll be the coach. Or sometimes I feel like Jay Paterno thinks that he deserves this with the way he treats his dad's legacy. And I'll be honest, Paul, I think a lot of people, regardless of what you thought about Joe Paterno in 2012 and 2013, I think Jay Paterno has only done damage, right? Like, I think he's taken, you know, some people didn't like what Joe Pa did, and that's fine. Some people wanted to defend him, and they can do that as well. But I think that Jay Paterno has basically turned Joe Paterno into a punchline, because every time you hear his name now, everybody just rolls their eyes for the most part.
Well, there's no question. And Scott Paterno probably didn't help matters at all either. Those two, and I get it, they want to keep their dad's legacy alive, but there is a time and place for it, and there's the right way to go about it. But this thing where every single time someone comes down the pike that wants to do something, the fact that Jay Paterno is the guy that's jumping out in front of the cameras, I mean, that tells me everything I need to know about really what his motivations are. And I just, when it comes to, you know, college presidents are going to defend their coaches for the most part when it comes to stuff like this. But honestly, I'm not sure this is one that you want to go so far out on a limb that you really got, you know, you're going to defend and have the back of your coach. As I've said before, I think the most important thing you have to do is hook up with your trustees and some other people, and maybe come up with an idea on how you can, in a lesser way, still honor Joe Paterno, the football coach's legacy. You know, I don't know, maybe just put the statue back up, but you don't want the centerpiece of your football program and the centerpiece of your, you know, of your campus, essentially, you know, Beaver Stadium. You don't want that to become Paterno Stadium, where everybody has to recite that every single time they're talking about that stadium. You know, when you have a guy that is linked to 45 counts of child sexual abuse.
If you want to put the statue back up, Paul, put it on the only building that is associated with Joe Paterno right now. Put it down at the library and talk about, you know, if you want to talk about what a humanitarian Joe Pa was during his career, then put it down at the library that still has his name on it, and let's move on. In terms of the Pirates, I wanted to wrap up with this, Paul. The Athletic, Stephen Nesbitt, our former colleague, published an extensive article on the conflicts within Ben Cherington's Pirates, Bob Nutting's Pirates, however you want to couch them. That the development sometimes is getting caught between the kind of human side and you know, the traditional baseball coaching and the analytics. There was talk about some guy from the Netherlands who is a movement coach and how they've kind of focused on all that. A lot of people kind of greeted it as, well, listen, we knew the Pirates weren't developing well. This isn't, you know, rocket science. Then other people, I think, were sometimes shocked by some of the details that came out. What was your reaction and does this go back to what you and I have been talking about on this show all winter, really going back into last season, of Ben Cherington's development regime clearly has problems, and whether we know the details or not, that's kind of borne out by the results at the major league level?
Well, I got to start this by saying I didn't read that article. I didn't see it. I mean, it says as we speak, it just kind of came out, maybe a few hours ago, so I haven't had a chance to read it. And everything that I've seen about it, it would suggest that it's a lot of more of the same, which is, you know, the development of prospects, the development of players has not always necessarily been the number one priority of this regime. And so all of the anecdotes that I have seen, none of them surprise me. Is the best way I could tell you. None of them really surprise me, all of the anecdotes that I've seen. But I think that, you know, it probably is more of an article. The way that it was sold, it was like this is going to be some sort of bombshell article. When the reality is, it's probably just sort of more of reinforcing what we kind of thought was going on behind the scenes, right? I mean, I don't know that there was – it doesn't seem like there was a whole lot of new ground that was broken in this article. So, listen – At the end of the day, they have not done well enough developing players and prospects. And that is something you absolutely need to be able to do if you're a small market team. So whatever has been done, they need to sort of move off of that and really work hard now on trying to get better in that aspect of their organization.
Yeah, I think the thing for me, Paul, is just that it's felt like Ben Cherington in some quarters has been above question for the last 5 years because, well, they were Neil Huntington's players, and you got to stock the whole system with Ben Cherington players before you can be critical of him. And this feels like the first year that some of these people that have just relentlessly defended him as needing more time, have even entertained the idea that maybe the development has not been good for a period of years. And I, you know, I look back at when Cole Tucker got cut. It was very quiet. It was very hush-hush. Not a whole lot of people talked about it. But to me, he was a former number one pick. And the fact that they couldn't figure him out, they couldn't figure any number of guys out from the Huntington regime, should have been, to me, I think, a signal that maybe these guys and their development chops that you know, Bob Nutting, Travis Williams were touting when they hired him, aren't as good as to put him above question for as long as he's kind of just gotten to skate.
Well, again, I think one of the things that's always amazing when it comes to the Pirates is that people decide who is going to be the villain before they know the facts of the story. That's almost always how it works, because there are certain people that are our favorites or are not our favorites. And the thing about it is, if you go back to Neil Huntington taking over for David Littlefield, think about the number of David Littlefield guys that were left over that turned into something for Neil Huntington. So I don't necessarily buy, you know, the fact that, you know, Cherington should get a pass because they're not his guys and all that other stuff. I guarantee you there are good players and there's some talent in the minors, and there was some when he took over. And now we're in what, year four, year five, whatever it is? At some point, it's got to start producing results.
I agree. It better be this year, or there's going to have to be a larger conversation had. Paul, any final thoughts on the week before we sign off here?
No, not really. It's just that it looks like it's really nice out, and maybe, Adam, it looks like it might start becoming golf weather here a little bit.
I was about to say, I think you got to go out and play a couple rounds, Paul.
Yeah, I definitely will if it stays like this for a few days, for sure.
Well, hey, everyone, enjoy the weather. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the channel. We're going to have a lot more Steelers talk in particular for the rest of the week. Christopher Carter will be back with the North Shore Drive on Friday. I'll be back on Saturday, I believe, with Brian Bacco to do our weekly Steelers mock draft tracker video, talking about all the prospects getting mocked to the Steelers this week. And then Paul and I will be back next Thursday as well. So make sure you subscribe. Make sure you like this video if you enjoyed it. Help us out in the YouTube algorithm, and we'll talk to you all again real soon.
All right, man. We'll see you. Thanks.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post-Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.